From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast Podcast. As always, I'm Justin Spears, joined alongside here with Dominic Pachaca. We are part of the Arizona Daily Star, hosting a live podcast at Frog and Firkin, talking all things Arizona basketball. Bruce Pasco, beat writer of the Arizona Wildcats, who writes for the Arizona Daily Star. He will be with us in just a few minutes to talk some Arizona Wildcats basketball. I do think there are some Arizona fans in Frog and Firkin right now. I think so. You know, going down on university.
It's that time of year, I guess. There's no school going on.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Tucsonans can come out and kind of come take over Frog when students are usually here.
Yeah.
I guess it's nice, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, I was under the impression that there, since there wasn't going to be any students here, Frog and Firkin was going to be
dead.
Kind of
empty.
Kind of like a ghost town, but it's popping in here.
It is.
There's a handful of people. People trying to stay out of the cold, even though it's a beautiful day out. People packed inside Frog and Firkin enjoying some cold ones, some French fries, some pizza. All things.
You're making me hungry.
I know, it's amazing.
You take the rest of the podcast, I'll go get some food.
But by the time we've already talked about Frog and Firkin and kind of hyped them up a little bit, we've already out-rebounded Arizona.
We have. If you're sitting here at Frog eating your pizza, you have more rebounds than Arizona had against Baylor.
Man, that was atrocious. Absolutely atrocious. By the way, before we get started here, really talking about some Arizona Wildcats basketball while everybody enjoys their food here at Frog and Firkin and some cold ones. Like I said, we're part of the Wildcaster. This is the Wildcast podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, or you can download the Wildcaster app available on the App Store and Google Play. We will be here every Tuesday before home games. So this is our last live podcast at Frog and Firkin before the new year, Don.
I was just going to ask that. Is it the last one in 2018? It is.
Yeah,
huh?
It is. All so right. this is the last one of 2018. Our next one will be January 2nd as Arizona gets ready for Pac-12 play against Utah and Colorado. So, fun times. So we're going to make this hopefully the best one so far out of the 2018
year. And on a high note, right?
Absolutely. So, Don, like we said, Arizona lost against Baylor at home. I wish I had a loser horn right now so I could play for the Arizona Wildcats. But not only did they lose, they got out-rebounded 51-19. And you know what the cool thing about it was? Is at the end of the game, it was 50-19. And Sean Miller kept saying that in the press conference. Oh, it's 50-19.
Right,
got out-rebounded 50-19. And then Arizona Athletics came up to us after the game and said, oh, guys, by the way, sorry, we didn't mean to do this, but we missed a rebound. So it's actually a 51-19 margin. I was like, oh, great. So
why not? Why not?
Why not add one more?
Set another one, 52. It was rounded out at 55.
But Arizona getting worked on the boards, and that's something you don't normally see out of a Sean Miller team, especially in recent years when you've had a DeAndre Ayton or a Dusan Ristić or a Caleb Tarzewski or a Brandon Ashley or Eric Gordon. Like, the list goes on and on of these great players that Sean Miller has had in his front court. You know, Arizona, you always talk about point guard you, but in the recent history, you could say forward you.
Seven-footer you.
I mean, Lauri Markkanen is
right,
another one.
I mean, when's the last time they didn't have a seven-footer on the roster? It was before Caleb Tarzewski. Before Caleb and Deuce.
I mean, they've always had a seven-footer on the roster because shout out to our guy, Kirill Nyashko.
Wherever that guy is. Why do I feel like that's not the first time he's came up on this podcast before?
Oh, many times. We got to get that guy on our pod next time. But Arizona, like you said, Dom, they've always had seven-footers on the roster. Now they don't. Chase Jeter is the only guy close to being a seven-footer. And even then, he's like, what, 6'10 and a half, 6'11? And
that's being generous, right?
I'm not sure if he's capable enough of carrying the load, out-rebounding everybody, because I kind of think he's playing out of position. I see him more as a power forward, kind of like a Brandon Ashley in some way. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's a starting center.
Well, he has to be for Arizona because he's their biggest guy. I mean, that's the difference this year. Last year you had Ayton and Ristić. Years before that, you had Tarzewski and Ristić. So you had kind of that backup where even if Tarzewski wasn't on the floor or even if they were both on the floor together, you had two guys down low rebounding, whereas now a lot of that burden falls on Chase Jeter's shoulders. So it's kind of, I mean, he's got to pick up the slack. It's not necessarily, it doesn't mean that Chase Jeter's not playing well or not doing his job on the inside. He just has to contribute more for Arizona to be that rebounding team that we've seen in years past. Because you said it, their point guard, they've dominated the glass for as long as I can remember. I mean, they've done it for years now. Mm-hmm. And it's the one thing, I mean, you said the Baylor game, it felt like a blowout.
Oh, the entire game felt like they were down by 20 points.
Right, and I mean, they were in the game at the end of it. If they made their free throws, it's a two-point game with a couple possessions left. So they were in the game. They only lost by 9. But that rebounding margin, 51-19, it just makes it feel like a blowout. And the players and Sean Miller afterward acted like it. I mean, they felt they were just so down. And I mean, if you hadn't watched the game and just watched the post-game reactions, you would think that it was a blowout. Mm-hmm. And final score aside, it was.
Mm-hmm. I'll never forget. So after the game, usually in a bad game like that, even if Arizona wins, Sean Miller likes to take his sweet time. He never likes to rush for post-game availability. Players aren't in any rush for post-game availability. And so when Arizona lost, I thought in my head, oh, I got some time to go talk to the Baylor guys. I want to talk to Scott Drew. I want to talk to Mekhi Mason. And after I was done talking to those guys, I was walking back to the press conference room, and shout out to our guy Larry, who works at McHale Center. He's the new bodyguard of Sean Miller. He's the one that walks him out to the court every single time. Larry was standing outside of the door, and I said, oh, Larry, have the players came in yet? And he said, players left, coach is in right now. I was like, wait, what? I literally talked to the Baylor guys for not even 5 minutes. Sean Miller was so upset, I don't even think he talked to his team after the game. That's how bad it was. You get out-rebounded 51-19. And my thing is with this Arizona team, is I don't think Arizona is talented enough to have an off night and still win a game like that. And that's the thing that makes this team different than recent years, even last year. Arizona, with DeAndre Ayton, Raleigh Alkins, Alonzo Trier, uber talented. Mm-hmm. They could have off nights and they would still win easily by 10 points. Or, like, if last year's team played against that Baylor team, Arizona wins by 20 plus.
Absolutely.
But they're not talented enough to have an off night and still be able to win games.
Right, and that doesn't mean that they're not talented. You said it. I mean, you got guys like Brandon Williams, Brandon Randolph, who are all talented. Chase Jeter inside, he's probably their most talented player on the roster. But it's just they don't have that supporting cast that they used to. I mean, when the first starting rotation comes off the court and you bring in the next five, it's a huge drop off of talent. And it's not that Sean Miller doesn't have more depth than he's had in years past. I mean, you see him usually run 6 or 7 deep. He's running a lot more than that this year, but it's in part because he has to.
Yeah.
And I mean, just not to hang on this rebounding thing here. We look at Arizona had 5 offensive rebounds. I mean, I just want to get into their lack of offensive output, which goes hand in hand with their rebounding numbers. But Arizona had 5 offensive boards the entire game against Baylor. Baylor had that number with 10-11 to go in the first half. They had 5 offensive rebounds. They finished with 18. So when you have a team like Arizona who's not necessarily equipped to go toe-to-toe with those tall guys inside, especially when we get into Pac-12 play and they face guys like Bol Bol, who's 7 foot. Was he 7'1"?
Yep.
And, I mean, it's just not going to happen. And then they get in foul trouble. We saw Ryan Luther, Chase Jeter, and Ira Lee all in foul trouble against Baylor early in the second half. When that happens, then you're really in a dilemma inside, because then who's your center? Emmanuel Aycott? That's not going to work.
Yikes.
That's not going to work in Pac-12 play. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not hyping up the Pac-12 here. I'm just saying when you go against guys like Bol Bol, they're going to go hard at you inside early. And even if you can hold your own for a little bit, once Chase Jeter picks up 2-3 fouls, I mean, it's Emmanuel Aycott against Bol Bol at that point.
Yeah.
And that's no knock on Emmanuel Aycott. That's just, I'm just saying he's not going to be able to keep up with a 7'1" guy inside.
And that's why I say, and I really started to think about this after that Baylor game, is maybe this recruiting class isn't the answer Arizona needs. I'm not talking about 20. I'm talking about this upcoming class.
2019.
With Nico Mannion, Josh Green, Terry Armstrong, Christian Coloco, Zeke Nagy. Mm-hmm. It's just they need beef in the front court. They need some guys that are willing to make an effort to grab rebounds, because I don't think Chase Jeter's that guy. Christian Coloco, from what I've seen and what I've heard, he's going to be a project player. You probably won't see him get significant minutes until maybe his sophomore or even junior year. However, he's going to be the only 7-footer on the team. So I think
he'll get minutes.
They're going to rely on him to get some significant playing time. And that's why I say Chase Jeter, his decision on what he's going to do next year is so critical, because he could just get up and go to the NBA and Arizona's left without a big for next year. Now, you could put, like I said, you could put Christian Coloco in there, but do you really want to put a guy who is new to basketball? Because he's from Cameroon. Mm-hmm. He just got introduced to the game of basketball recently. Are you going to rely on a guy like that to be your starting center? Or are you going to rely on Zeke Nnaji, who is naturally a power forward, to slide over and play out of position like Chase Jeter is right now? I just don't see Arizona's 2019 class being the answer that Sean Miller needs for this team right now.
Well, they've had a number one recruiting class before, and we all know how that ended. In a loss to Buffalo in the first round. Look, this is where it all comes back to Sean Miller, and I hate putting this much weight on his shoulders, but this is where it really matters and where he really has to step up. We look at this recruiting class this year. If this isn't one of the youngest classes, and when I say young, I don't mean freshman-wise. I just mean in terms of overall experience in college basketball. And I know you have guys like Justin Coleman and Ryan Luther who are grad transfers. They've been here or been playing for 4 years. But when you look at this team, they're one of the youngest, least experienced teams Sean Miller's had at Arizona. And it's really on him to develop these guys. I mean, Chase Jeter and Ira Lee, Chase Jeter, of course, is a junior, so maybe not as much him. But you look at guys like Ira Lee, who needs developing. He's a young player. He came here as a freshman. And it's up to Sean Miller to develop him and turn him into a player that Arizona needs him to be. You look at this team at the beginning of the year to now, I don't know how much they've improved.
Yeah.
Which, again, I mean, that's on Sean Miller to develop these guys. And you can be the best recruiter in the country, which Sean Miller is in that category. He's in that upper tier. But it then, okay, you have the talent. Even next year when they have the number one recruiting class. Last year they had the number one recruiting class. You have the talent. You have to develop it to make it mean anything, to make it, I mean, valuable. Mm-hmm. These are all NBA names last year and this year. They're all going to be NBA-type caliber players. But what they're, I mean, it's up to Sean Miller to turn them into players in college who can compete for Pac-12 titles and who can compete in Elite Eights and Final Fours and championships like we haven't seen in years past. But look, Sean Miller, I mean, we've talked about this before, Justin. It's one of, I mean, this team this year is doing stuff that Arizona hasn't done in 30 years. What did we say? It was the first time they scored under 50 points at McHale Center since 1985.
Wow.
The last time that Arizona scored under 50 points at McHale Center, they had been to the NCAA tournament 3 times.
Jeez.
3 times. They had no Pac-12 titles, no Final Four visits. They've been there 3 times. I mean, this team is it's tough to say they're at rock bottom. Because you look at what they've had, you look at what they had when Sean Miller first came here to where they are now, and it's obviously grown exponentially every year. But it's just, I mean, they're at a record low. It's never been like this. The offensive output has never been this low, this bad.
I hate that I'm sitting here laughing because you're talking about how bad it really is for Arizona basketball right now.
1985.
There was another year you said that the last time or the previous time Arizona scored under 50 points was in 2004, correct?
Yes.
And I was thinking in my head, I'm like, well, at that time, 2004, I was in the fourth grade. Mm-hmm. Little John and the East Side Boys were one of the hottest artists in music at that time. Like, it was a weird time for Arizona basketball at that point, but they still won that game, right?
And that was 04. There was an amendment to that stat that I had. It was 2011 at UCLA when they lost 71-49. But still, you go back to 85. That was the last time it happened at McHale Center. Before 2011, that UCLA game, it was 2004 at Marquette. So it's just, look, the output isn't there right now, and that lies a lot. That's heavily on Sean Miller's shoulders because he has to develop these guys. Mm-hmm. If they really are that young, you look down the roster, and outside of Chase Jeter, Ryan Luther, Justin Coleman, they don't have any experience in real, legit, big-time scenarios. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to see that unfold as we get into Pac-12 play. The Pac-12 isn't anything to brag home about. We all know that. Yeah. But when they start playing meaningful games, especially when you look at, I mean, how they faltered in non-conference, they pretty much have to win the... I mean, it's a real scenario where they might have to win the Pac-12 to get into the NCAA tournament. So that's just, I mean, the pressure is going to build and build and build and build. And if they lose to Oregon or they lose to USC or UCLA or ASU early on, the pressure is going to mount. And these players, even if they're crummy Pac-12 opponents, the pressure is going to be on. They're going to have to start winning now. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, it's up to Sean Miller to get this mm-hmm. team ready. And I mean, that's really the bottom line.
Did the man of the hour just walk into the building?
He did.
Himself.
The man, the myth, the
Arizona
legend.
Daily Star.
You guys are doing fine without me.
Bruce, how's it going?
Good,
Bruce just walked
good.
In.
Yeah, I don't, for whatever it's worth, I think they scored also 46 back in Sean Miller's first year. Did you see that, Don?
I didn't see it.
Yeah.
I could be. Maybe I'm
I mean,
wrong
that was
again.
Like,
you know,
that's like a big asterisk because that was that first year when he was totally
right.
rebuilding with
right.
like barely a roster. So
we okay.
But in any case,
we have a couple asterisks.
Yeah.
Okay.
The last one at McHale was absolutely. I've double checked because I was called out for the 2004 staff that was wrong.
Yeah.
The last time it happened at McHale was in 1985.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But maybe there's we need some. We need
a
triple check the last
because,
time
because. The home record and performance is usually such a different deal.
Right.
You know, 46 at San Diego State, that was a weird game, if I remember right. Real defensive, grinded out deal and over there. But here, to see him score 49 here at McHale was really something mm-hmm. else. Absolutely.
Bruce, I don't know what you were thinking about when you saw that game unfold. Dom and I said it felt like Arizona was down by 20 the entire game against Baylor. And I can't remember an atmosphere like that at McHale Center since 2009, which was Sean Miller's first year, when Jimmer came in and dropped 49 points, and it almost seemed like McHale Center turned into a library funeral.
They were down by 20 in that game, and
I
think
40.
It was a 30-point game as it finished, if I remember right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you don't see deals like this very often, and that's one of the proud points of this program is that they don't get blown out. They don't lose at home very often, ever, and they don't get out-rebounded by 32 ever, except we just saw it. So it's really it was a historic game, and just you know, it remains to be seen whether it was an anomaly or if it's a sign of something to come and a worry point.
Can we just talk about their non-conference schedule really quick? Because I know Sean Miller gets a lot of heat for not scheduling big time opponents, especially at McHale Center, because the home fans want to see that. They want to see the big names, the big brand blue bloods in McHale Center. It doesn't happen, but I've always been kind of high on Arizona's non-conference schedule this year. They played Baylor. That's a Big 12 team. They played UConn, a blue blood of college basketball. They played Alabama, an SEC team, on the road. I feel like this is one of the better non-conference schedules Sean Miller's had at Arizona. They just didn't capitalize on any of those games on a year where they needed to. I mean, that if the Alabama game wasn't a must-win, the Baylor game definitely was a must-win, because now they head into Pac-12 play where they're not... I mean, ASU is going to be their only good, quote-unquote, good win in Pac-12 play. So their only non-conference game that looks impressive is the win over UConn on the road. Am I wrong?
It depends on how these teams finish the year. It matters on how they finish conference play, because if Baylor goes into Big 12 play and lays an egg and they're one of the worst teams in the Big 12, then that loss at McHale Center looks even worse.
Right.
It also depends on what Auburn does in the SEC. Depends on what UConn does in the AAC. But, like, you know, I look at the non-conference schedule right now, and I say, well, Maui Invitational, I thought they did what was expected in a deep Maui field, and they played competitive against Gonzaga. They were actually up at halftime, and then they ended up losing the game, but then Gonzaga turned around and beat Duke, so that looked like a good loss, if that helps. But I don't know. I just think that we can't grade this non-conference schedule at least until these other teams finish off conference play.
Yeah, but the teams you mentioned, I mean, Baylor and Alabama, they're in power conferences, so mm-hmm. their strength of schedule is going to be decent at the end of the year. Even if they do poorly, it'll still help them. And playing those two games in Maui definitely helps the strength of schedule, too. I think Arizona really did getting UConn and Alabama, Baylor, teams like that. That's about as good as you can get in this day and age to get a home-and-home series, especially out west here. You know, you're just not going to get Duke or Kansas to come into McHale Center. Those days are over. And so they're doing that. The only thing maybe you could fault them on is the first three games were 300-plus opponents, and those are really going to hurt them. But they kind of you know, they played Cal Poly was one of them, and they wanted to play Cal Poly because of the style. They play a lot of zone. They're kind of a tricky team, even though, but they just happened to be not very good this year. And then Houston Baptist, they pretty much had to play that game. That was a desperation situation they got into, so it wasn't really anybody's fault.
Was Chaminade one of their best non-conference opponents this year, even though it was an exhibition game?
I think it was the best opponent through the first five games. They were the best between the two exhibition teams and the three first regular season game, and they were the best team, yes.
So their best wins, sure, the Gonzaga and Auburn losses are okay, but it's not going to help them come tourney time. It's not going to hurt them necessarily, but it won't help them. Their best wins in non-conference play were UConn and Iowa State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, yeah, and UConn on the road. I mean, that was something. Yeah. And then Iowa State, and I think the Iowa State one may look a little better because they're getting their guys back, and you know, maybe they put together a decent season in the Big 12, and that could be a good one, too.
I bring all of that up in part not only to point out that Arizona may have to own the Pac-12 this year to make the NCAA tournament, but the last time they weren't ranked, which is probably going to happen this year unless they go on some incredible run in Pac-12 play here, last time they weren't ranked for an entire season was Sean Miller's first year. So we've kind of come full circle here. For everything, I mean, it took him to two Elite Eights, had a lot of talent come in and out of the door, and here we are with one of his youngest teams. You know, what is it, nine years later, and we're right back to where we started.
Well, and he even said that. I think at media day, I believe he said it feels a lot like a brand new team or a ramp. I think he said it feels like you're starting a new program, and it was because he just happened to be losing all five starters at the same time that the investigation basically torpedoed a lot of his recruiting class, and so they were, you know, here's a guy who went into April with six guys on his roster. And, you know, so it really was kind of a new team. And that's why I thought that their performance to date has been about what I would have expected. It's really been not a big surprise.
That's the other thing, too, is, sorry, Justin, to cut you off.
Good. But don't worry about
that's
it.
The other thing is that no one expected this Arizona team necessarily to be better. I mean, maybe three losses going into conference play instead of before. But, look, no one expected them to, you know, lose one or two games in non-conference play. No one expected them to beat Gonzaga or Auburn, even UConn, really. I mean, that was a tough game. And maybe Alabama was the one game that they should have had back. Certainly Baylor at home. But no one expected, at least realistically, this team to be that much better than they are right now. And look, they're 7-4. If all goes well this week at McHale, they'll be 9-4 heading into conference play. And they're going to, I mean, they have their work cut out for them in Pac-12, which.
And that's what I was going to bring up.
It's like, right. It's just so, I mean, it's so hard to say because.
What the hell is the state of the Pac-12 right now?
Right.
I mean,
not very good.
not good. This has to be.
It's one or two big league right now. The way it's looking. I mean, unless it shakes out in the conference that two teams go 15-3, maybe. But it's really going to be the team who wins in Las Vegas goes, and everybody else is very nervous on Selection Sunday.
Damn. Because I remember, in you know, recent years where you say, "Oh, the Pac-12 is down," but they have one, two, three teams that are above everybody else and teams that are capable of making an Elite Eight or a Final Four. But I look across the Pac-12 and I'm like, well, ASU seems like the only team that can make the tournament. That's just because they're ranked right now. And even I look at them and say, ASU could win one game in the NCAA tournament, maybe two. They can possibly go to the Sweet 16. I don't know. I just don't know what the state of the Pac-12 is right now. And I could see a team like Oregon. I know, Bruce, we talked about this before. They still got to get, you know, Lewis King back and settled in. I think they'll figure it out. But, man, like you said, Bruce, one team is going to get the lock to go to the NCAA tournament, and everybody else is going to be sweating bullets on Selection Sunday.
I think that weighs largely on what what Arizona State does against number one Kansas at home up in Tempe this weekend. Is it Saturday? Game's Saturday?
Saturday.
And I think about last year when ASU went on the road in Allen Fieldhouse and knocked off the Jayhawks. And that was a huge all-time win for the Pac-12 at the time. And they could do it again this year. It's unlikely just because it's number one Kansas. I think they're even better than they were last year. Look, ASU's good. They got the players. They have the talent. I think they're one of the most talented teams in the Pac-12, right there with Oregon, if not more talented than Oregon, just between Cheatham and Lugans Dort. But
it's a guy right there.
It's going to be difficult to gauge where ASU is because even if they lose, you say they get blown out by Kansas, it's just not really a fair gauge because Kansas is the number one team in the country. Sure, that means that the probably a top three team in the Pac-12, and ASU isn't as good as the number one team in the country and the number one team in the Big 12. But that's not necessarily a fair gauge. But what it would do for the Pac-12 if ASU were to be able to somehow pull off the upset, not keep it close, it's not going to matter if they lose, but if they somehow pull the upset, it's huge for the rest of the Pac-12 because then ASU has that on their resume. Well, so then if Arizona beats them, that's even better for Arizona. It's even a better look for teams that beat ASU in conference play.
Right. It'd be a guaranteed quadrant one win, whether you play them at home or on the road. They're going to be so highly ranked if they win that game. And also it means that they'll be all but assured of an NCAA bid even if they don't win in the tournament, so that effectively gets the second team in the league, if nothing else. I mean, because you can tell by what happened last year, they fell apart in conference, but their non-conference was so amazing that the committee let them in, and that's the way it goes, and they pretty much have sent that message, and if ASU can win this, I think it's like you're almost a lock before New Year's Day, which is weird, but it's kind of true.
Well, and we all know what happened to ASU after they beat Kansas last year. They kind of fell off the face of the earth. Well, I guess after the Arizona loss in Pac-12 play, they really fell off, but it's just, I mean, it's so hard to tell. If the Pac-12 beats each other up this year, that's really worst-case scenario. Because, Bruce, like you said, the only way they get multiple teams into the tournament is if there's multiple teams that go, like, 15-3, per se. Yeah. So if they beat each other up like they have in years past, it's not going to be good.
Cannibalize each other.
Right. They really need a couple teams to stand out. And I think those teams would be ASU, Oregon. There's a few teams on the threshold, like USC, Washington has showed some promise. They have the guys, but outside of Oregon and ASU, the Pac-12 hasn't shown me much.
I've seen a lot of teams like Arizona that have the guys. It just doesn't seem to work. Mm-hmm. Before we get into Bruce Pascoe's brief scouting report, I know Bruce is eager to talk about these Montana Grizzlies. We've got a Twitter mailbag question. At WritingEasy99, he's asking about the women's basketball team, actually. Asked, how does the team look and how will it fare in conference play? They won their eighth consecutive game last night against UTEP. They won pretty handedly. But they've done this in years past where they look great in non-conference play, and then once they get to Pac-12 play, they're going up against UCLA, Stanford, Oregon, ASU. Like, the Pac-12 is the superior conference for women's basketball. And I think Arizona can actually finish in the top half. It's crazy to think that, but they have three transfers, one from Purdue, one from Washington, and one from Iowa State.
All big conference, Power Five, big time schools,
and they're all contributing right away. It's Dominique McBride, T.T. Starks, and Ari McDonald, who's the nation's leading scorer right now. Arizona women's basketball, what Adia Barnes has cooking up right now, it's worth it right now, and I highly recommend anybody to go out and watch those games because it may not be put together now, but you're starting to see the product that Adia Barnes wants to represent Arizona.
It's the talent level is way past what it's been for years.
Yeah.
This program, it's really something.
Yeah,
it's just difficult. I mean, that question, it's difficult to tell what they're going to be in Pac-12 play because if you're underwhelmed by Arizona, but by the men's non-conference schedule, you're going to be really underwhelmed by the women's non-conference schedule. Mm-hmm. And Adia Barnes even talked about that a little bit. That's intentional. She wants to get the team building up to the Pac-12 play. But Pac-12 is just leaps. I mean, it's one of the best conferences in the country when it comes to women's basketball. So it's just so hard to tell. I mean, if they finish in the upper half, I think that's a huge, huge step forward for this women's program that's been at the bottom of it, literally the bottom of the Pac-12 for years now.
And a lot of their key players, they're all underclassmen. They're all sophomores. Mm-hmm. So they stick around for a couple more years. I'm telling you what, maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but the year afterwards, Kate Reese, who's a McDonald's All-American, she's going to be a junior. I'm telling you what, Adia Barnes has something special going on here at Arizona.
Is there a time coming up when the women's team will be better than the men's basketball team in Arizona? It's tough to say because they got the number one recruiting class coming in.
Yeah.
That's the kicker. But look, the women's team's good. They're trending up. They're trending upward. Mm-hmm. If the men's team is trending down right now, at least for the time being, the women's team is definitely trending up.
Who knows? Maybe it's like UConn at some way where the national...
You did not just compare.
But in terms of national recognition as a both men's and women's basketball program. But Bruce, what have you seen out of the Montana Grizzlies?
I'm actually surprised they have three losses, those are all away from their home. They don't lose at home. They haven't lost at home. I don't know how many games. They've got a pretty good streak there. going. They're effectively a top 20 type mid-major program. They're coming off a Big Sky championship. They won 26 games last year, and they got four starters back from that team. And three guys are from the Pac-12. They're a really good veteran big, mid-major team that really you shouldn't even call mid-major because they're legit. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Arizona, because if Arizona's in its game, they can still handle this. They're bigger. They can probably out-rebound them. But as we saw the other day against Baylor, you know, I don't know if they what they're going to be. I would imagine they would come out and correct that problem, and they'll be pretty motivated. And, you know, if they're not, then there's going to be it could be a really sign of some problems. But like when you were speaking, Dom, earlier about the non-conference schedule, when I looked at it earlier and who had what coming back before the season, I thought between Baylor, Montana, and Davis, which I thought Davis would be a lot better than it is, I thought they were going to probably have trouble if not lose one of those three games, and they already have. And this is another one they could lose. The difference is they're coming off two straight losses now. They should be pretty fired up and not, you know, not going to slack on this one.
You would think.
Yeah.
But if they were somehow lose,
yeah,
I think it's time to push the panic button a little bit.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, too, is when is it time to push the panic button? Because
when you lose to Montana at home.
Right. No, I understand that. But again, I mean, we talk about expectations for this year, and no one expected them to be good. I mean, this is the rebuilding year for Arizona. Yeah. So it's tough to hit the panic button in a quote-unquote rebuild year. But I know Arizona fans are always going to expect them to perform. And Bruce even said Montana's a good team.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. It's the perennial expectations you have here. Maybe if you're not really... If you're not fully locked in on exactly what this team has gone through and how difficult it was for them to put together a roster, much less a competitive roster, you might think everything's okay, especially if you watched them beat Iowa State and then come out and lead Gonzaga at halftime. You're thinking, hey, maybe this is a top 10 team. Who knows? But, you know, clearly they're not that. They were never expected to be that, but they did at least rise up in Maui, and maybe they've got some more of that in them. Mm-hmm.
Arizona, they take on Montana this Wednesday at McHale Center, tip-off set for 6:30 p.m. You can watch it on Pac-12 networks, or you can also follow the Wildcaster on Twitter. We'll be providing live coverage. You can also like the Wildcaster on Facebook. We got all the goods. And then plus Arizona, they'll also end the non-conference slate against UC Davis at home this Saturday, tip-off set for 5 p.m. You can also watch that on Pac-12 networks.
I got one more question for Bruce here, because we saw a couple of guys between Vital and... Who is the transfer from
Mekhi
Yale?
Mason?
Yeah, Mekhi Mason. Between him and Vital, they just tore Arizona apart. Who's someone we need to keep an eye on for Montana?
Well, I think maybe this Ahmad Rory. They're one of their guards. Both of their guards are really good. But Rory was a player played at Oregon in 14-15, then transferred to Montana. He had developed a relationship with the coach at Montana now. And went there, and he was all Big Sky last year. Really good all around player, good scorer. But they have a couple really pretty dangerous guys. You know, they've got a really good defensive player playing opposite him in the backcourt, and a pretty tough guy up front as well. So, you know, I'd say probably those three guys.
Yeah. Go Grizz, as they say in
Grizz.
Billings? No, it's not Billings, Montana, is it?
It is in Missoula. Yeah.
Missoula.
Yeah.
Our boy Cal Hansen's going to be in town this week covering his Montana Grizzlies.
We're excited. He's probably around here somewhere because he's a U of A alum.
I'm surprised he's not here, honestly.
At Roggenberg as a spot. That's a spot. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast podcast. Again, the Arizona Wildcats taking on Montana December 19th, which is Wednesday. Tip-off set for 6:30 p.m. Again, you can follow all of our coverage on the Wildcaster Twitter page or the Wildcaster app, which is available on the App Store and Google Play. We just would like to wish everybody here at Frog and Firkin and all of our amazing listeners happy holidays, even though we will be recording more podcasts from here until then. But for people that are sitting here at Frog and Firkin, we want to wish you a happy holidays and a happy new year.
Happy holiday to Frog, too. We can't thank them enough for hosting us.
Seriously, can't thank them
they're
enough.
They're always great. Come on out. Give us a listen probably every other week about during the basketball season. You can check the Wildcaster Facebook page for all the events throughout the rest of the season. But it's always a great time, Frog.
Always a good time. So that'll do it. Thanks. For Bruce, for Dom, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Wildcaster fans. Come check out The Point Being, the Arizona Daily Star's opinion page podcast. We talk about current events, what's going on in the world, the letters page, and more. So check us out at thepointbeingpodcast.com.